back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Backdoor to Clayton, makes the catch inside. Has to dribble out of trouble in the paint, backs up, turns, fires a three from the top. He's good! He did it again! Clayton's got 28. Florida leads by one. What a shot by Walter Clayton!
He had a layup. He dribbled out and shot a three.
There it is. Florida into the Final Four. One seeds all advancing to San Antonio. Will they now play it off? Jerry Palm, CBS Sports bracketologist, here to talk about it. Jerry, how you doing, man?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
I'm doing well. My kids are outperforming me in the bracket. My 8-year-old is clobbering me in part because I think she just went with the higher seeded teams. She said, okay, ones are good.
Yeah. Well, I guess I had three of them because I had Michigan State. But I feel like my bracket's doing pretty well because I only missed three in the first round. Mm. But then I missed three the first day of the second round also. Yeah. So. I feel like I'm doing all right.
I was with you. I picked Michigan State. I thought they would be the lone 2 seed to get there, and I picked all the other ones. So I'm with you as well, but my kids are just trouncing me. But tell me, like, your takeaways in general from the bracket. You know, committee, get it right, get it wrong. Does it not matter? Does it matter? How is this tournament going?
Okay, so you can't validate or invalidate selections and seeding based on what happens in the tournament, because that's not criteria. They don't have that information when they're making those decisions. So you can't really say, well, all the ones are there, so the committee got it right. Well, that's not really a thing. The committee got North Carolina 100% wrong, one of the worst selections in the 30 years that I've been doing this. I can't even think of a worse one. That was such a ridiculous selection, and the fact that they beat San Diego State doesn't change that. But otherwise, I didn't really have too many complaints, and the tournament has been very chalky, and a lot of people are worried that, well, maybe this is the end of Cinderella in the tournament. I don't know, 1 year is not a trend, really, but, with all the money flowing up to the major conferences, it's going to be harder for the teams that aren't in the major conferences to put together a good enough team to make a two-game run and get to the Sweet 16. And if they do, all of their good players are going to be gone the next year because they'll get poached. So it's going to be tough, I think, for Cinderella to survive long-term in the current environment. And I guess that's probably my main takeaway from all this.
True or false, Gonzaga was underseeded?
No, absolutely not. That's right about where I had them all year. It's a team that had a gaudy predictive metric. You know, they were the top 10 in the net and KenPom and the ones that care pretty much only about scoring margin, because Gonzaga was a scoring margin king. They were number 2 in the country in scoring margin. They didn't beat a soul. Baylor, Indiana, San Diego State, 2 of those teams made the tournament. One was first out, among the first out. San Diego State, of course, was last 4 in. I mean, that's just not quality wins that get you seeded any higher than they were. So I was concerned that if predictive metrics were going to rule the day, that Gonzaga would be seeded ahead of Memphis, but both of those teams ended up being seeded right, I thought.
True or false, you talked about the mid-majors, but you know, there were only 8 teams that got at-large berths that were not in the Power Four: Creighton, Xavier, Marquette, UConn, St. Mary's, Utah State, San Diego State, New Mexico get in. Do you feel like the committee was manipulated? Is this just a trend? Does the Power Four have justification? What do you make of that?
Okay, I guess my first issue with that is that the Big East is a power conference in basketball.
There you go. Okay.
So you mentioned 3 Big East teams. That's a power conference, and they will be until things change. That they're not, but there are 5 power conferences in basketball. So it's even fewer than you say. The Mountain West didn't have anybody seated higher than 10. New Mexico and Utah State, I think, were both 10s. The West Coast Conference had a 8 and a 9, or was St. Mary's a 7? It was, yeah, those were teams not seeded to do very well, and they didn't. I mean, they really play under their seed. Colorado State got an upset in their first-round game. It was even fewer than you think, and those teams didn't go very far, but they weren't seeded to go very far. So like I said, 1 year is not a trend, but let's see what happens going forward.
Yeah, and I'm interested in your mind because if you do want to back it out, I mean, in 2022, there were 12 at-large bids that went, again, outside the Power Four, using air quotes here. Then in 2024, there were 10.
Well, then it was actually six because the Pac-12 was still in existence back then.
Okay. All right, so everyone, including me, is saying, hey, it wasn't as much fun in those opening two rounds. I didn't have as much fun. And for me, I want to say it's because there was no Florida Atlantic. There was no Belmont. There was no Davidson. There was no Dayton. It just felt like, a lot of Power Four.
Because they didn't win their second game. Yeah. I mean, there were some of those first games. We had like half a dozen lower-seeded teams win first games, but they didn't win the second one.
Yeah.
And so when we got to the Sweet 16, it was pretty chalky, and it's been chalky ever since. And so people think that's, the excitement is when somebody wins it's not supposed to. We didn't have very much of that in this tournament. In fact, we ended up with four number ones in the Final Four, and the only other time that happened was 2008, which was also San Antonio, by the way. That Final Four was very, especially the championship game, very entertaining. But I don't know. We'll see what we get. But, yeah, if you're the kind of person who really likes to see the, Cinderella, this was not your year.
Jerry Palm with us, CBS Sports. Had an athletic director tell me that he said, why in the selection committee were they suddenly talking about wins above the bubble and factors like that? When you're breaking down your bracket, Jerry, what criteria, what metrics are you using?
I'm trying to use theirs, the ones that are on the team sheet. So wins above bubble was new to the team sheet this year. So that's why they're suddenly talking about it, because it's part of the team sheets for these teams. They now have, I guess it's six metrics. I think it is the net, KenPom, and BPI, and Torvik. So Torvik is also new this year. So they have four that are, basically margin of victory predictors. And the strength of record and wins above bubble and KPI, so it's actually seven metrics. Those three don't really take margin of victory into account. And it felt like, with the possible exception of North Carolina, that they probably were going more on how resumes looked. And I don't think you needed metrics to really tell you how they looked. You could just look at the resume and figure it out. But I don't know that the predictive metrics had as much weight as probably people would like. Like KenPom has got, it's almost a cult following, and people want whatever KenPom says to be, law. But that's not really how the committee wants to operate. They want a process that is not based on running up a score. But they have four of their seven metrics that do nothing but measure scoring margin. So they're so heavily influenced by scoring margin that, if you see something that looks out of place, well, check the scoring margin, because that's why.
I mean this with all due respect, but you're one of these nerds that geeks out on the numbers, and you understand them, and you understand how to make them work. And why not, if you're the committee, come up with some kind of algorithm, some kind of data system that literally gives you a seeding 1 to 70 or 1 to 80, much like the net rankings, and then remove the human element, damn it, so that people can complain.
So you
want
the BCS again,
yeah.
Which everybody complained about.
Yeah, yeah.
That's basically what that was, right?
So
six
tell
computers,
me.
A couple of polls, and making decisions, and then the people weren't involved, the people complained about that.
Right.
Basically, you're never going to make everybody happy. I'd rather have a committee making decisions because there's nuance that the numbers will never catch. And if you don't understand that. You know, you basically people have to understand that. The computers never will. So I want people involved that can understand the nuance. That still doesn't excuse North Carolina. But, yeah, it's funny because I'm always defending the committee against all the non-merit-based accusations for putting teams in, and I can't do that with Carolina this year. There's no merit-based reason to put them in the field.
Did it bother you, and I don't know how far you want to go on this, but did it bother you that Carolina's AD is the chair of the committee, or are you always going to have those situations?
There's always going to be something like that. I mean, those people are affiliated with schools and conferences. And the protocols say that, you know, if your school or conference is involved in something, you're not involved in the discussions. You're not in the room. They can't talk to you about it. And I'm sure they follow their rules. But, you know, Bubba Cunningham's been on the committee for 5 years. He's known a lot of those guys for a long time. Did that influence them? So even if it didn't, they didn't realize it while it was? Maybe. I don't know. Because there's no merit-based reason to think of North Carolina as a tournament team. Things like that come up because there's no other way to explain it.
What about the idea of putting a committee together with people like you, Jerry, and finding a bunch of guys that can crunch the numbers and then maybe have some basketball people who have no affiliation with the school in the room? And you know, what about that approach? Or do they fear that it gets out of their control?
Well, they're never going to let it out of their control. You know, the basketball tournament is not going to be decided by people like me. And I'm fine with that. You know, I mean, if I ever retire, I would love a job. I would love a seat on the committee, you know, at some point, but I'm not working for a school, so I'm not going to be ever part of that committee. Maybe I'll get to be the retired media member on the football committee, but you put a bunch of geeks in the room, and we're just going to argue with each other for, I don't know, 4 days or 5 days or whatever. And I don't know if we'll get it done.
I am left now looking at these four teams. You've been pretty good on your bracket. How do you see this final four breaking down?
Well, I picked Florida to win the tournament at the beginning because I thought they were the best team going in. The best team actually through the tournament so far has been Duke. That's who I picked for the runner-up. But, you know, Auburn was the best team for most of the season until I think they just took their foot off the gas at the end because it was apparent they were going to be the overall number one seed. I just think mentally they took their foot off the gas. But it's hard to get it going again once you do that. And then Houston is a different style of team in that they're very defense-oriented, although their offense is really good as well this year. But they play a different style that is really hard to get ready for. And I just think it's going to be really interesting. These four teams are different. They're all really good. I think any of them could legitimately win it. I picked Florida, so I'm sticking with Florida. But if you're going to go by who's had the best four games so far, I think you got to go with Duke.
I am fascinated to see what happens with tournaments moving forward. But what questions do you have about, you know, again, small sample size? I'm looking right for more mid-majors next year in general, maybe a little more noise in the first and second round, an outlier in the Sweet 16 that we can all get behind. But what's Jerry Palm thinking about as next year's tournament approaches?
I've probably said this already. In fact, I know I have. 1 year's not a trend. And the tournaments, each tournament's its own beast. So, you know, until we get this going 2-3 years in a row and Cinderella's dead, I don't think it's time to worry about it. You know, next year somebody's going to step up, and more likely than not, we're going to see a 12 seed or an 11 seed or whatever in the Sweet 16. Because that's normally how this thing goes. At some point all the money's going to flow uphill and maybe we don't even have a tournament like this anymore. But I hope I'm not around for that.
Well, let me speak to that. Like with the Crown tournament, Fox's creation happening, does that give you any concern that, you know, is Fox kind of running this as a beta? Like, could they do their own thing and start to lure away bigger teams and tournament teams
They even lured away the teams they were hoping to get. So, like, Indiana sat it out. know, in Indiana, just all of the other tournaments have teams that just say, you know what, we're not doing it. So I think getting a competing tournament would be really difficult, because they're not, you know, that's not the tournament anybody wants to be in.
Jerry Palm, CBS Sports, with us. I want to talk about data and analytics in general. If I hired you and I said, hey, I want you to help build a case for my school and get them into the tournament, how difficult is it to create a formula that, and sell it publicly, that works to create a narrative that, you know, down deep, Jerry, you and I both know my team's a bubble team, but let's make a case for them. I hear strength of schedule trotted out a lot in that way, but you tell me, how difficult is that?
Okay, hiring me in late February to get you in the tournament is the wrong time to hire me. You need to hire me in the summer when you haven't put your schedule fully together yet for next year, because okay, that's where the work gets done. You know, you got to put don't control your conference schedule, but you need to put together a non-conference schedule that gives you a chance to make the tournament. And it's going to depend on the quality of your team to some degree, and it's going to depend on the quality of your league. You know, because if you've got a league, let's just say the West Coast Conference, because they're out there. The West Coast Conference has got two reliably good teams, Gonzaga and St. Mary's right now, right? And that can change over time. But for now, they've got two reliably good teams. It's really important for everyone in that league to schedule as many wins as they can. And if you're a team that you think could make the NCAA tournament, you need to schedule a team or two where you can show the committee that you're a tournament team outside your league. If you're not, if you're in rebuilding mode, schedule games you can win. And because all of those wins carry through in conference play, you're playing, we'll just say, Loyola Marymount. You know, Loyola Marymount in non-conference play, if they're 4-5, doesn't help you much. If they're 8-1 and they've played the dregs of Division I to get to 8-1, those 8 wins carry through every time you play Loyola Marymount. So you want everybody in the league to play to schedule to get the best non-conference record they can, because all of that carries through in the ranking. So that's how you game the system in terms of rankings. But if you think you have an at-large team, you do have to schedule a team or two or three in non-conference play to show the committee that you have that kind of team.
So essentially, if you're Stu Jackson, the WCC commissioner, and you're listening to Jerry Palm right now, you're saying St. Mary's and Gonzaga, don't listen to this part. Everybody else in the conference, schedule to win. Schedule to win, strength of schedule, yeah, not important, win games.
But if you're let's say you're San Francisco and you think, you know what, I've got a veteran team coming back, we could possibly be an at-large team.
Okay.
Schedule a couple of games to prove it. But then schedule wins otherwise. I mean, that's the thing. Schedule games you can win. And it's not that you would think that would not be a tough sell to coaches. Hey, I want to win some games, right? And maybe you build some momentum in non-conference play, and maybe you win a couple more games in conference you didn't think you would, because you got some confidence going into conference play. But the important thing is schedule wins. Now, because you have these predictive metrics involved, which wasn't the case until, you know, I don't know, 7 or 8 years ago, you know, now you also want to win big when you can win. But winning is the most important thing. Winning big is secondary. But you want to win big when you can win big. Winning by 20 is great. If you can win by 30, even better. Because all of those predictive metrics like that kind of thing. And Gonzaga is a poster child for that this year. Now, they didn't get a great seed because they didn't get enough quality wins, and they weren't going to fool a committee with their predictive metrics. But, you know, the numbers all, everything carries through in conference play. Two-thirds of your schedule is your conference. So you want as many non-conference wins as you can get in the league, because that all carries through once you get into conference play.
Yeah, I think the University of Portland women's team ran into that, in that, you know, they had some ridiculous record, like 29-4, but hadn't played anybody, and they lost the games against Gonzaga and Oregon State, and so they just didn't have a resume as an at-large team in the women's bracket. Conversely, let me ask you, along the lines, you know, of scheduling tough, Gonzaga has expressed quietly that they would like to play Oregon, but they can't get Oregon to schedule them. Is there a reason why you think the Ducks don't want to play Gonzaga?
You'd have to ask Dana Altman.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know why they wouldn't want to play Gonzaga.
Any disadvantage? Any risk there?
There's a risk you'll lose. You know, you're playing a good team. There's always a risk you'll lose. But I really can't say why teams don't want to play someone else. You really have to ask. I mean, if they want to play Oregon and Oregon saying no, you need to ask Oregon why they're saying no. I can't really tell you.
Yeah.
The Big Ten, you know, they're in the Big Ten now. You're going to get enough good teams on your schedule in the league that you don't have to play a ton of good teams outside the league. You still want to play a few.
Sure.
But maybe they're already scheduled to the point where adding Gonzaga doesn't make sense because they've got enough good teams on their schedule already. But I don't know. You'd have to ask Dana.
So if I want to hire you in the summer, you're open for business. Now, I know you've done this from, you know, a football standpoint, basketball standpoint. Are you getting hired?
Basketball, too.
Okay, so are you getting hired by schools or by conferences?
It's normally conferences because it makes more sense at that level, really, to talk about it from a conference level, because that's a case where even if you don't have it, if you're in rebuilding mode, you could still help your league.
Jerry Palm,
and,
you're the best.
You know, and besides, like, if you're going to be, if you're predicted for, you know, last in your league, everybody likes to win games. I mean, it's like, you know, my job is to convince people to schedule games you can win.
Right.
Schedule the best teams you can beat. You know, it's like, but I want you to win games. You would think that would not be a difficult sell to coaches, right?
Fascinating conversation, especially the part about scheduling. And I'm sure your phone's going to ring as the Pac-12 and the WCC and some others are going to call you and say, help us out. Jerry Palm, thank you, man. Wish you the best.
All right, thanks.
There he goes, Jerry Palm, CBS Sports. I love that stuff down the stretch. You know, now I was on campus at Gonzaga, and I kind of offhandedly made the comment, hey, why don't you play Oregon? And they were like, we want to play Oregon. And it's not a recent thing. You know, there's something. I got to ask Dana Altman that. I got to ask him, you know, is it just there's nothing in it for Oregon to take that game? It's a game they could lose. They've got enough games on their schedule. You know, if they see Gonzaga in the tournament, fine, but don't need to play them. Has it been, you know, hey, they want to play them at Matthew Knight Arena and Gonzaga doesn't want to come there? Gonzaga wants it as a home game? I don't know. I'd love to know that. I think they should be playing that Pacific Northwest Classic. How about a neutral site? Can we do it at Moda Center? Leave it here. You got the BFT.